Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
All right, welcome. Great to have you with us. Scheduled to have Stan Savern on the show today. We'll do that at 4:06. We've got Mark Brennan, if we can probably set this up for maybe later in the week. We'll have him in the Sunbury Motor Studio to talk about Ali. Also Matt Leon on later in the week as well. And also Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, is going to join us as well. Later in the week, the passing of Muhammad Ali. It's interesting how a man, if you are 45 years or younger, then Muhammad Ali to you is a myth. And just like to me, Joe Louis would be a myth. Babe Ruth would be a myth. If you're 45 and younger, Muhammad Ali is a myth to you. His life, his career, and so forth. You've probably read about it. You've seen enough on biographies. But you have to understand the times and have lived through the times to understand the controversy by which he was a transcendent figure who was perfect for the time, and the time was perfect for him. If you had a loudmouth, braggadocious individual in the 40s and 50s, it does not work, especially if that individual is not white. If you do it in the 80s and 90s, okay, you're really blending in with a lot of other people who are, you know, and just part of the noise. But in the 60s and 70s, there was nobody on the planet like Muhammad Ali at all. And while it appears that at the end of his life, he's a perfect example, Muhammad Ali is, of time heals all wounds. Ali was someone who was a tremendous self-promoter, a tremendous fight promoter, an incredible athlete, an unbelievable personality, a tremendous boxer, an absolute student of the game, a brilliant strategist, and an extremely loyal individual to people around him. He was all of that and more during the course of his life. Aligning himself with Malcolm X did not endear him to a significant segment of the population. Aligning himself with Elijah and Herbert Muhammad did not endear himself to a significant portion of the population. Saying that he would not accept his draft status and would not go to Vietnam obviously did not endear himself to a significant portion of the population. Yet Muhammad Ali was true to himself with two major exceptions. One would be obviously, you know, when you have four wives, so you got to say one is to women. And number two, you know, to the women in his life. And number two, to Joe Frazier. I'll get to that in a moment. Everything else, he was true to himself. An incident happened to him early in his boxing life. His idol had been Sugar Ray Robinson. Again, to me, would be a mythological figure. George and Joe Paterno told me so much about Sugar Ray Robinson. And George Paterno was personal friends with Jake LaMotta, who fought Robinson many times. Well, Ali idolized Sugar Ray Robinson. Many said pound for pound he was the finest fighter in the world. And Ali went to see Sugar Ray Robinson and had to wait 6 hours. And then when Robinson got there, he just kind of like blew him off and kept on going. Ali never forgot that. Ali never forgot that. And that's why Ali signed for everybody. He signed for everybody along the way. And that was the big difference in what we saw in him in the humanitarian side. He always gave people his time. If you read the Dick Girardi story in the Philadelphia Daily News, when Dick went up to Deer Lake with his two buddies in 1974, just outside of Reading, Dick was not writing for a newspaper. It was Dick Girardi and his two buddies going up to Deer Lake to see Muhammad Ali and being greeted at the door by Muhammad Ali months before the George Foreman fight. And having breakfast with Muhammad Ali. That's the way Ali was. If you had time for him, he had time for you. I went through my first 2 years, as you know, as I've talked on the show, I was at the Penn State Wilkes-Barre campus. And there was a radio station there where I got my start, 10 watts. I always joked that you could lose it in the parking lot. And in the spring of 78, we decided to put on a play. Now, I had a bit part in the play. I was supposed to play a federal authority, and I had a couple lines, and I had a sight gag in it. But we all had to participate in it. We were all doing it for a grade. Now, Muhammad Ali went to the Kirby Center in Wilkes-Barre. Well, there's nobody available to cover it because I have to be in this play. And I can't remember her last name, but her name was Anne Marie. And I can't remember her last name. I think my friend Mana Antonitis, who worked with me, who's from Milton, would probably remember her better than I would. And Anne Marie was actually did news. Now, again, we're a college station. And she goes into Wilkes-Barre to interview him. And when I was done doing the play, I got back to the station up at the Commons at the Wilkes-Barre campus. And she comes in. I said, "So, hey, how'd it go?" He says, "It was unbelievable." He stopped. He talked with all of us. He gave us all time. So she had a tape recorder. And so she played the interview back. And it was really, well done. She did a good job. He was extremely gracious. And it was done. I'll never forget this. When they were done, he says, "You're the female Howard Cosell." Now, that was the playful, always great sense of humor, Ali. And in the end, made her feel like $1 million. She didn't really need to use stairs to get up the stairs that night to get to the radio station, because he made her feel great. And but that's the way he was. But it's a complicated legacy. But it's also one that you remember certain things. As one of the things that I'll do on the road for bowl games is that they will ask me to MC pep rallies. And before the Orange Bowl in early January 2006, they had the pep rally in the Miami Convention Center. And I've had people over the years ask me, "Hey, when you stand in front of big crowds like that, what do you think?" And it's not what you think. It's not what you think I'd be thinking. I got up at that one, and I remember looking out. Huge crowd. Thousands of people there. I remember it like it was yesterday. And it was 10 years ago. I remember getting up on the podium and looking right to left. Sea of people. Thousands of people. And I remember thinking, wow. This is where Ali beat Sonny Liston in 1964. This is really cool. That's exactly what I was thinking. So it's not what you always think that we think, but that's exactly what I was thinking. Wow, this is where Muhammad Ali beat Sonny Liston in 64. I thought I was at a historical landmark. So the Ali was supposed to get crushed by Liston and did not. He won in the seventh round, proclaimed to the world that he was the greatest. I've always talked about the NFL, and when I talk about the Steelers, that why I consider them to be the greatest dynasty is because they won four Super Bowls in 6 years, but they did it in two different ways. When they won Super Bowls 9 and 10, they were an awesome defense and an awesome running game, and Terry Bradshaw did what he could throwing the ball. The last two Super Bowls, they had a great defense, but an awesome passing game, where it was Terry Bradshaw, John Stallworth, and Lynn Swann. And the fact that they could win with two distinctly different styles offensively is what always has impressed me. Now let's transition back to Muhammad Ali. The Muhammad Ali before he decided to forego the draft and fight it as a conscientious objector was a lightning quick snap that jab, plenty of power in that right hand, and by the way, you could not hit him. The one time he really got hit was Henry Cooper knocked him down in the fourth round in England. And Angelo Dundee, the great Angelo Dundee, did something that was illegal in the game. He snuck in smelling salts and revived Ali in the corner, and Ali then knocked out Cooper in the fifth round. That's the one time he got tagged beforehand. Sonny Liston couldn't tag him. Cleveland Big Cat Williams couldn't tag him. Ali was lightning quick and could not be hit. Now he loses 2.5, 3.5 years of the prime of his career. Well, I guess once he went 3.5 years, prime of his career. And he comes back, and he still has the bounce in his feet, but he's not as quick. He still has that left jab, yeah, but he was getting hit a lot more. And he proved that he could go toe-to-toe with the greatest in the world in what was a golden era in the heavyweight division. And could win in a slightly different way. And that is one of the reasons why he's one of the true all-time greats. And that part is something that the fact that he can win with really two different styles is remarkable. He found out he could take a punch. That's good and bad. I think his ability to take a punch led to some of the later life problems that he had. How could it not? And that was incredible. Now the complication of Ali. Ali was personal friends with Malcolm X. Okay, so there's a segment of the population not happy about it. The conversion with Elijah and Herbert Muhammad. There's a segment of the population not enamored with that. Then, as a conscientious objector, he's not going to go to the Vietnam War. Now, they changed his draft status. Remember, he's 25 years old. Most of the people going into the Vietnam War at that time were 18, 19, and 20. He's 25 years old at the time. He was actually classified 1Y originally. And you may not realize this, but in high school in Louisville, Ali graduated with a D-minus average and was 376 out of 391 in his class. He was designated 1Y because that would be physically fit and able to perform in the military, but did not pass the aptitude test. Well, there's a reason. Muhammad Ali, a brilliant man, was dyslexic. Now, in the 60s, they didn't really know what the heck is that. Nobody knew. So that was the reason why. Because Ali was obviously a highly intelligent man. So they changed his draft status because they lowered the standards to do it to get more men into the military. And suddenly, boom, there he is. He's in. So he says no. Now another segment of the population is not enamored with him. So he's stripped of his title And there's also a segment of the population that draws great respect for him. But something dramatically changed in 6 months after he declared he was not going to go into the draft. Now, obviously, you know, he was going to be in prison. They're going to fine him thousands of dollars, the whole thing. But then something happened. And in 1968, the most turbulent year I can remember in my lifetime in this country, in January 68, the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong launched the Tet Offensive. They went all out, attacked the South, attacked 100 different South Vietnamese cities. They were repelled in most of them. People forget that during the Tet Offensive for 8 hours, the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong for 8 hours held what was thought to be the impregnable American embassy in Saigon. And after 8 hours, boom, the United States got it back. And then in 2 weeks, drove the North Vietnamese out of Saigon. Hue was held for about a month. And again, the North Vietnamese were driven out, as were the Viet Cong. So the Tet Offensive ended up where the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong literally did not win a single battle. They were driven out of every single place they attacked. The Mekong Delta, everywhere. Da Nang. But it dealt a huge blow to how Americans then felt about the war. After the Tet Offensive, there were a lot of protesters in the street in 65, 66, 67. It grew exponentially after the Tet Offensive. Suddenly you had people saying, I don't know if it's worth, quote, us being there. That, in turn, did help Ali, because now more and more people were coming around to his way of thinking 6 months later because of the Tet Offensive. And keep in mind, in 1968, the Tet Offensive happens in late January. The last city that they held was Hue, and they were driven out in late February. At the end of March, President Johnson, who in 1967 was considered a shoo-in for not only the Democratic nomination but also for re-election, announces to the country at the end of March, I'm not going to accept my party's nomination. I'm not running. And a week after President Johnson announces he's not running, Dr. King is murdered. And then 2 months, and the anniversary of this was yesterday, Bobby Kennedy was shot and killed. He was actually shot on the 4th after winning the California primary and died on June 5th. And the man that wrestled the gun out of Sirhan Sirhan's hands happened to be former Nittany Lion Rosie Grier. And the riots that took place in this country, everywhere. We had Denny McClain on the show 2 years ago. We had Denny McClain on the show. He won 31 games that year. He said the Tigers winning the World Series calm the city of Detroit down because it gave everyone a unified purpose to root for. This is the backdrop under which Ali said no. Then Ali comes back. He fights Jerry. He gets a boxing license in Atlanta. You know, he finally got to the Supreme Court and he won. He gets a boxing license to fight in Georgia. He beats Jerry Quarry, tough heavyweight, in 7 rounds. Oscar Bonavena goes 15 rounds with him. Ali finally knocks him down 3 times in the 15th round. I remember watching these fights. And it sets up the Frazier fight. This is one area where I'll tell you where Ali is not true to himself. He's true to himself as to his conversion. He's true to himself as to how he feels about the war. He's true to himself as a strategist, a fighter, as a loyal man. There are several within his circle that wanted to dump Angelo Dundee. Ali said, nope, nobody touches Angelo Dundee. He says, I'm loyal to him and he's loyal to me. That's Ali. But the one area he was not true to, and one person he really wasn't true to in the game of boxing, was Joe Frazier. People don't realize Frazier needed Ali to come back because he wanted to validate him being the heavyweight champ. He went to Nixon about this personally. Frazier did, and to others about getting Ali reinstated because he wanted a big fight, but he also wanted to validate the reason that he was the heavyweight champ. But a lot of people don't realize Frazier, as time was going with Ali, the number of friends over a period of time starts to dry up. Over time, the support starts to dry up. Over some time, the money starts to dry up. Guess who floated him some money from time to time, and not just once? Joe Frazier. I realize they're trying to promote the first fight, but he referred to Frazier several times as an Uncle Tom, among other things. Frazier grew up as a poor kid in South Carolina, a family of 12 in the South. Huh? Frazier knocks him down in the 15th round. Everyone remembers that. What they forget is in the 11th round, Frazier knocked him down too, but Arthur Mercanti jumped in right away and kind of got him back up at his feet right away, didn't rule it a knockdown. Anybody who saw the fight knows that Ali was actually knocked down in the 11th as well. And Frazier wins the fight. Ali then goes through. He gets his jaw broken by Ken Norton. He still makes it through all 12 rounds. That shows you how tough he is. Eventually, he fights Frazier again. He beats Frazier in a 12-round decision. That then sets up the Foreman fight. I thought Foreman was going to beat the living daylights out of him. I really did. Foreman was the top of his game. He had knocked down Joe Frazier 6 times in Jamaica. You name it. I mean, I'm sitting there. I'm 16. I'm almost 17 years old. I remember thinking, Foreman is going to beat the daylights of this thing and go 4 or 5 rounds. Right? And of course, we all know what Ali did. Ali went in there, and he turned an entire continent against George Foreman. Ali Bumbaye, which means kill him. Ali Bumbaye. Yeah, they're all chanting it. What? And then finally, the last great fight of his career was the one against Frazier. And that's where he always had called Frazier ugly, but then he started referring to him as a gorilla. And, I mean, again, not being true to himself. I mean, he really hurt Frazier deeply with his words. When it was over with, a friend of Frazier's goes back into the dressing room or an area near it. Maybe it was to the hotel. And all the lights are off in the room. Frazier's eyes were slits. Eddie Futch had to stop the fight. It was one of the great humanitarian moments in boxing. And Frazier, first of all, he tried to figure out who it was. They turned the lights on, and it's one of his friends, and he says, Lordy, Lordy, he says, that is one great champion. He said, I hit him with everything I had, and I couldn't knock him down. He says, would an ordinary guy, he said, be out cold. He says, Lordy, Lordy, what a great champion. Ali, on the other side, if you watch, he is helped to the dressing room when it's done. Right? He's helped. And then that's when Ali starts talking about how great Frazier was. And you notice at the end of his life, as each year went by, from 76 on, he kept always talking about how great Joe was, how great Joe was, how great Joe was, because he even regretted everything he said. Take a break. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
We shot high in May
and had a lot of happy customers.
At Sunbury Motors Ford, we shot for 101 sales in May,
and we were so, so close.
Now, we're determined to do it in June,
and you'll be the winner.
101 vehicles sold means you'll save more money than ever before.
SMC is where you want to be
during the month of June, because new Fords will be discounted to the lowest price possible. Plus, we'll give you more for your trade.
SMC is where you want to be
if you want to choose from 45 new Escapes starting at $19,880.
SMC is where you want to be
if you want to choose from 123 new Ford trucks with F-150s starting at $23,749.
Save over 11 grand.
SMC is where you want to be
if you want 0% financing for up to 60 months on Fusions, Edges, Escapes, Explorers, and F-150s. Sunbury Motors Ford will reach the goal of selling 101 new Fords in June.
Our goal is your gain.
Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for 101 years.
Okay, top of the hour, and Stan Saverin is going to join us. Look forward to hearing from him, a great friend whom I learned a lot from early in my career. Somebody I can't thank enough. Man, I had the best, I'll tell you right now, I was surrounded by some great mentors.